Greg Tatro is 4 degrees low, Mr. Tatro. It's 88 degrees already here in the Twin Cities. Just to put a more accurate point on it, you probably can feel that if you're out there right now. So here we go, 12:06 on this Saturday afternoon, hot, sultry day, prickly heat out there, as the British say. Good afternoon to you, Stan Turner here. Happy to have your company. Oh, we have a great show for you today. George Rumpel, how's by you? How you doing?
I'm doing well, Stan. How about you?
I'm good. Don't go outside, George. It's a little tough out there right now.
Yep, the dew point is up. It's kind of sticky out there.
It is. You can take the kind of out of there. It's definitely sticky, and that's it. We will not be complaining about this stuff come January and February, though, will we?
No, we will not.
I wish we could bottle this stuff and let it out a little bit during those cold weather months. Well, we're going to get moving here. I just want to mention to you, there are so many fun, interesting, worthy things going on around the metro area. One is unfolding today, in fact, right now at Fleming Field, the airfield in South St. Paul. A car show going on right now through 3 o'clock this afternoon. Let's see. What do they call that? It's called Further Performance, I guess. It's Midwest Car Show. It's called Mad Further. And that'll go till 3 this afternoon. Lots of vendors out there. If car shows are your thing, head out there. But another thing happens after that show. The Commemorative Air Force is hosting its annual fall hangar dance and fundraiser at the same airfield out there at Fleming, starting at 6 tonight. Running from 6 to midnight, features music by a great band. I heard them last spring. They are called the Roseville Big Band. They sound like Glenn Miller. They really do. They do great swing stuff. There'll be free dance lessons out there, food, aircraft tours, door prizes, and more. Tickets are $15 at the door, with the proceeds benefiting the Commemorative Air Force Wing. That's part of a nationwide operation, George. You know what they do. They preserve America's and maintain America's aviation legacy.
Good organization.
They are really that. They keep those old warbirds and civilian aircraft from decades ago, even before World War II, maintained and still flying. Out there tonight, B-25 Mitchell bomber, twin engine, the type that was used against Tokyo in the famous raid in April of 1942. They'll have Mustangs, P-51s, and the National Group sometimes, not tonight, but sometimes brings in the Super Fortress, the B-29. And they just have a whole bevy of great and well-maintained aircraft from long ago. So that's what this is all about, a fundraiser tonight out at Fleming Field, Commemorative Air Force. I have the good fortune to help kind of MC things tonight. So hope to see you out there, folks. If you want more information on the car and or air show, you can go to the website CAF, that's F as in Frank, CAFMN.org. And you'll get all the stuff right there. So, here we go then. Our in-studio guest today is one of our very favorites. She's been with us many times, always up to the moment, on what's coming off the book publishing presses. Mary Ann Grossman. Yay! She is the dean, or should I say grand dame, of American newspaper book critics and editors. She is respected, widely respected by authors, booksellers, and publishers, and certainly by we readers. And she has legions of those. I always like to say that Mary Ann Grossman's life is an open book, because there are usually several open books in front of her at any given moment, and as she decides which to review and which to, well, save for another day. Mary Ann Grossman, welcome back, dear.
Well, thank you. We've been having so darn much fun. I forgot we're going to go on the air.
I know. We've been dishing here for a half hour off air. We should have turned on the mics and just started it right there. And by the way, when I walked in this morning, I saw a gorgeous bouquet of flowers out there in the waiting room. I do believe your name is upon them, and something about happy birthday to you.
And it is no secret, I was 75 yesterday.
Is that all?
Yes.
I knew you were over 35.
As long as Sid Hartman doesn't retire, I won't be the world's oldest living journalist.
Well, you got a long way to go. Sid is, what, 92, I think,
right,
91 or
right.
And God bless his soul, huh? He keeps going, right?
When you say grand dame, I think of Barbara Cartland. Remember, she was the romance writer who was Lady Di's step-grandmother or something?
Yes,
and she'd wear these ball gowns for her publicity pictures, and they'd have to take it through, they oiled the lens so she gets.
They would kind of put Vaseline around the lenses to soften the wrinkles. And I know. Well, a lot of the stars do that. How long have you been reviewing books for the St. Paul newspapers, Marianne?
Since 83.
And how did you happen to come into that line of work?
As a book editor?
Uh-huh.
I think I've told this story. It's a revenge story.
I love the story. Yep.
We had a boss who hated me. A new boss came out of nowhere, hated me. I never found out why. I don't know if he looked like his Aunt Tilly or he said something. And so everybody in the whole paper, all the writers had to change jobs, and there was blood on the floor, and then he left.
Yeah.
And because he didn't like me, he gave me the least interesting job in the whole newsroom, which was book editor, although a woman was doing a very good job, but she was a reporter, Catherine Boardman.
Oh, yes.
So he thought I was going to sit in the corner like Miss Havisham and and get cobwebs, ha-ha, here comes the revenge. The literary community exploded, and it became the best beat on the paper.
Oh, isn't that great.
The loft started, small press started, agents came here. It was this amazing renaissance in the arts community that probably wasn't like anything else in the country. And somebody better write this story before we all die.
You were in the right place at the wrong time as punishment.
Exactly. And
you're the last laugh.
And he didn't even stick around long enough to see it happen.
I think the paper booted him out of town. I hope so. I know whom you're speaking of, but we will not name names.
But no,
a roundly disliked character. Anyway, the law of unintended consequences puts you in this marvelous. You've done so well with this position.
Well, it's fun.
And as I said in my introduction, you are beloved by the reading public, certainly by publishers, authors, especially local authors. You are the champion of local authors.
Well, except for a few.
Well, there are a couple we'll lead out.
I had to tell them your self-published book doesn't make it, my friend.
But in a way, that's a favor, though. You know what? Coming from somebody like you.
They don't think so.
I know, but they got their ego all tied up in that. Well, listen, I wish folks you could see our desk here in front of the microphones right now. It looks like a church book sale, doesn't it? It's all over the place, except these are all new or not even out yet in
not
some
even
cases.
Out yet. Some
so
are.
I know you've got some, you brought down to the station this afternoon some columns for the St. Paul Pioneer Press that haven't even been published yet, but they're all ready to go. They're already to hit the press.
Edge here,
so
Sam.
we're ahead of the curve here, Marianne Grossman, birthday
Ripped
girl.
From the headlines.
So I you know it's there's no magic to this. Wherever you want to start, I know you do a lot of fiction reviewing, and I think that's your fort. That's your favorite.
Yep. Well, let's start with my column tomorrow. Well, it's not a column. I think it's going on the front page. It's a story about these amazing reading series that are happening this year. Now these reading series have been around, but this is an exceptional year. Listen to who's coming.
Before
now,
you start, this is going to be on the front page of the.
I think
it's going to
so
be prominently displayed.
Prominently displayed
in tomorrow's Sunday. Say, well, yes. Go ahead.
Okay, here are just a few of the people we're going to be welcoming October, November.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We have Margaret Atwood, Bill Bryson,
wow.
A.J. Byatt, Dennis Lehane, Nicholas Baker, Pat Conroy, Delia Ephron, Wally Lamb, George Saunders, Art Spiegelman, Amy Tan, and David Meissner.
Those are big names.
They are big names.
One of my favorite travel writer, Bill Bryson, grew up in Iowa, worked for a long time in England. I think I have all of his books on my bookshelf, and they're just a hoot. They are not only informative, they are a laugh a minute, laugh a chapter. The guy is brilliant.
He's a wonderful speaker. And we wouldn't have them if there are four reading series, Club Book, Pen Pals, Talk of the Stacks, and Talking Volumes. Mm-hmm. Two of them are paid, but the other two are free.
Really?
The Club Book especially, that goes to libraries. And these get funding from the Legacy Amendment. And I really want to put in a good word for that amendment.
That's the one a lot of us voted for in 2008.
It's been getting criticism. And granted, there was kind of a funny story about a woman who had a fence, and so she got $10,000 to do an art fence. And there was some criticism. But by and large, when you go to these readings and you see these people there who probably could not afford to go to some of the other ones,
it's
a wonderful thing to do.
It is. Legacy Amendment helps both the literary side of things, history side of things, as well as the outdoors.
Right.
It was a brilliant stroke to combine all this. What was it, like a 0.5% increase in the state sales tax?
It was brilliant because the hunters wanted it.
Well, sure. I know, but it worked beautifully.
It did work beautifully, and
that's good. It's good to preserve our outdoors.
Right.
And it's also good to preserve literary and historical pursuits as well. And we got it all in the same bag. Mm-hmm. And who wants to criticize that? We can always find somebody who wants to criticize that. But it passed. It's the law.
Yep. And it's helping.
And lawmakers, don't mess with it.
Right.
Leave it alone. Leave it on the books. Well, Mary, the reason we've got these big, Margaret Atwood, from Canada, right? Great list here of big name literary stars. There's a reason they come here, too.
There is a reason.
And
that's what this story is about. there's, well, we can go through it again. We've done it before, but we've got literate people,
yep,
people who take writing seriously,
mm-hmm,
good bookstores, people who like to ask good questions.
Mm-hmm.
David Unowski, who was kind of the dean of programming because he had the hungry mind, he was,
yes,
he was inviting authors in the 70s.
Yeah, yes.
And he says, this is a good town. Let me read this exact quote.
Mm-hmm.
These are great towns for readings. Good authors will draw an audience. Authors know it. Publishers know it.
Yeah.
Unowski told me.
Is it because we freeze for about 9 months out of the year?
You know, I don't think so.
I'm being facetious.
I know. And people say that often. But, you know, that's kind of the Fargo myth. It kind of spreads out like, well, you people are just so bored. But I don't think so. I think it's the other way around. We read, you know.
Yep.
We read.
We do. We read. We love it.
Yeah.
And we know when you're on the radio here, a lot of people who knew you were going to be on today are listening because they'll get it clued up here on what's going on. I should mention that 1 week from today on the show, a colleague of yours at the St. Paul Pioneer Press, Tim Mahoney, will be here talking about his new book. George, you're going to like this one. It's called Secret Partners, Big Tom Brown and the Barker Gang. This was this guy, Tom Brown, hulk of a guy, 6'5", 275 pounds, was the chief of police in St. Paul starting in 1930. He was crooked as a dog's hind leg. He was on the take. He was in cahoots with the Ma Barker Creepy Carpus Gang, taking kickbacks, bribes, you name it, and everybody just looked the other way. And it's an amazing true story.
Well, and those were the days when the crooks could be here,
yep,
if they behaved themselves.
It was called the O'Connor system, put in place about 1900 by the police chief and police commissioner, John J. Big man, Big Daddy O'Connor. Mm-hmm. And he hung around till about the 1920s, and then Big Tom Brown came in and continued the graft and corruption. And his story really has not been told in detail to this point. Paul McAbee has touched on it in his great book, John Dillinger Slept Here. But I'm eager to get Tim Mahoney on. He sits across the desk from you at the St. Paul Pioneer Press, so we know he's for real.
Yeah.
And I've just started his book. I will have read it by the time he's here, all the way through. And, George, I know you're going to be traipsing over to Valley Bookseller after the interview to get a copy.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's a great read. I think it's only like $18. It's in soft cover, so that makes it accessible to everybody.
Right.
So just a little detour there, Marianne, but
that's
I just wanted to mention, we're
going
to be talking a lot about mysteries, other fiction today, but that's one of the nonfiction category, and a colleague of yours, so I thought I'd mention it.
Good.
Now, my good lady, Marianne Grossman, go ahead. Tell us what you got here.
So we've got, it's a big, big year. Well, it is a year for war, unfortunately.
Yes.
And we've got two books that that sort of speak to it. One of them is Walking the Res Road by Jim Northrup. He's an Anishinaabe, now an elder, known around the world for his writing. And this is the 20th anniversary edition. And it's about, it's stories and poems. It's about Luke Warmwater, who came back to the Res, Fond du Lac, and just couldn't quite find himself and his adventures.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say adventures, but how he got through it.
Oh, okay.
And this is a poem, and it's called Shrinking Away.
Right.
Now, remember, this was written right after he got back from when Jim got back from Vietnam.
Okay.
Survived the war, but was having trouble surviving the peace. Couldn't sleep more than 2 hours, was scared to be without a gun. Nightmares, daymares, guilt and remorse. Wanted to stay drunk all the time. 1966 and the VA said Vietnam wasn't a war. They couldn't help but give me a copy of the Yellow Pages. Picked a shrink off the list, $50 an hour. I was making $125 a week. Spent 6 sessions establishing rapport. Heard about his military life, his homosexuality, his fights with his mother. And anything... I'm sorry.
Sure.
And anything else he wanted to talk about. At this rate, we would have got to meet in 1999.
My. Well, George,
and there's more of that.
George is a Vietnam War veteran. It's not a war, was it, George?
Yeah, tell that to the people.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know.
But we're there.
That's exactly
and
what
and the absurdity
about.
Of that comes through, and that's the satire there. Yeah.
And the other one,
yes.
This is a brand new collection. I just got it, Stealing Sugar from the Castle by Robert Bly.
Stealing Sugar from the Castle.
Right, and it's selected and new poems. You know, Robert is in his 80s, and he has had some memory loss, but... He's still doing fine. And this poem, The Teeth Mother Naked at Last, may be one of the great anti-war poems of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope everybody knows it now that we're going into Syria. I'm just going to read a little bit from the middle, but this could be any war.
We're not yet in Syria, but we're seeing what's going to happen. Go ahead.
Artillery shells explode, napalm canisters roll end over end, 800 steel pellets fly through the vegetable walls. The six-hour infant puts his fists instinctively to his eyes to keep out the light, but the room explodes. The children explode. Blood leaps on the vegetable walls. Yes, I know, blood leaps on the walls. Don't cry at that. Do you cry at the wind pouring out of Canada? Do you cry at the reeds shaken at the edge of the sloughs? The Marine Battalion enters. This happens when the seasons change. This happens when the leaves begin to drop from the trees too early. Kill them. Don't want to see anything moving. This happens when the ice begins to show its teeth in the ponds. This happens when the heavy layers of lake water press down on the fish's head and send him deeper, where his tail swirls slowly and his brain passes in pictures of heavy reeds, of vegetation fall on vegetation.
What's the context of that war or time period? What is it, or is it just a generic?
He was writing about the Vietnam War.
About Vietnam War,
right?
Okay,
but I think the whole poem taken together, it's 5 pages long, could be anywhere, any page. Which is the great thing about great poetry.
And also
it's timeless.
Right, it is. Isn't it Tim O'Brien of Minnesota who wrote
it's interesting, he just won a military award, but it was only, and it was a big award. I don't remember how much money, but. It was interesting because they said he won this military war, but they didn't say why. And it made it sound kind of like, oh, well, he writes about battles. But he didn't. What he did, along with Stephen Meditations in Green, Stephen,
I lost his last name.
Yeah. Anyway, they invented a new form of novels because it was such a senseless war, they couldn't use the standard forms. And so they had to use dreams and... psychological
allegories, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And the things they carried, I think, is the name of the title of Tim O'Brien's
book. And Going After Cacciato, which won the National Book Award.
George, as a veteran, do you make it your business to read some of these things, fiction or nonfiction, or is it just too painful?
I was lucky. I was in the Air Force over there and on air bases, and most of my views of the war were rocket and mortar attacks rather than direct combat. So, yes, I do read about it.
You do. Okay.
But my wife used to say, why do you watch the movies or read about the war in Vietnam? She says, it's over with. And I says, not in my head, it's not. I spent a year over there.
Well said, George. That's pretty profound. Well, anyway, yes. And so Robert Bly, that's a new book you just read from.
Stealing Sugar from the Castle.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Carry on, Marianne Grossman. What else do we have?
Well, should we do some lighter things
now? Let's get to the light side of things.
All right.
That'd be okay. Yeah. Be careful how you handle this one now. It's a family show.
We have a debut for young adults, and then we have Kate DeCamillo, Flora and Ulysses.
We're going to get to those, Mary. I'm going to take a break for a commercial here.
Is that what that sound was?
That was me breaking. That was my bones. George,
I thought somebody was
going to
shoot me.
George just broke my left arm saying, we've got a break for a commercial,
Mary.
But we'll get back to these. Turn Left at the Cow. Title of one. We'll be right back. At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barber shop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
Get behind the wheel of a new vehicle from River Valley Ford in Baldwin. The Ford Explorer has room for seven with plenty of power under the hood to pull the boat or camper. Road trips are more fun with the unmatched comfort of the Ford Edge. For the daily drive to work, you can't go wrong with the Ford Fusion, Focus, or Fiesta. We've got them all right here at River Valley Ford. Shop, compare, and find out why so many of your friends and neighbors choose River Valley Ford in Baldwin.
River Valley Ford. Hear every touchdown, field goal, and tackle right here on AM 1220 KLBB. This is Wayne Larrabee, the radio voice of the Green Bay Packers. Your Packers station in the Twin Cities is AM 1220 KLBB.
Tune in Sunday, September 8th to hear the Packers take on the San Francisco 49ers. Pre-game at 1, kickoff at 3:25. It's the home of Green Bay Packers football on Club 1220 KLBB.
We are back here, Stan Turner welcoming you here to the show this Saturday. We're up to our earlobes and books, new books, great stuff. Who better to talk about it than the veteran, highly respected book editor and critic of the St. Paul Pioneer Press, Mary Ann Grossman, our birthday girl, just a kid. Now she's over 35 years of age, has flowers out in the waiting room to prove it. And we're so happy to have you along here. We've got a whole slug, a whole stack of books, one here. Turn left at the cow. I can't wait to talk about that. But first, you've got a map here in front of you, a frameable wall-size map.
Right. Who, for those who didn't see my absolutely wonderful story about this map.
She said modestly. Yes, okay.
It's the 25th anniversary of Minnesota Book Awards, and this is their final project, and it's the Friends of the St. Paul Public Library and the Minnesota Historical Society. And Pat Coleman, who is the acquisitions library at the Historical Society, and Elaine Hopkins of the Friends put this together. There have been three or four of these before, literary maps, but this one is two-sided, it's colored, it's beautiful, 110 local authors, and Pat Coleman, who knows more about Minnesota authors than anybody in the universe, says these are the books and authors you should read if you want to be an in-the-know, literate Minnesotan.
And so it's poster size and has a big map, bigger than poster size, map of Minnesota with the caricatures of the authors.
Right, and Chad Nestor was an illustrator and did the designs. And what's wonderful about it is there's little round headshots, caricatures. But then he went a step farther and he drew a little icon for every author. For instance, Bill Holm has Minnie Otis stamp.
Oh, sure.
And Gene McCarthy has stars around him. Mm-hmm. And Wanda Gogg has all those little cats because of millions of cats.
And
up in Collegeville, J.F. Powers has a priest. I should also point out that there's a new book about J.F. Powers. I don't know how many people remember him. He won a National Book Award for Mort Urban. He wrote about Catholic priests a lot. Mm-hmm. They lived in Collegeville and in Ireland. Mm-hmm. His daughter has just edited a new book of his letters. It's called Suitable Accommodations, mm-hmm. an autobiographical story of family life, the letters of J.F. Powers, 42 to 63, and she's coming to read.
Oh, great. Good.
So, good. People who care, and there are people who care deeply about him.
Absolutely, and for good reason. The back side of the
The back side, which I'm trying to do this without crinkling, mindful of radio.
Yeah, knocking the microphone off here.
The other side has an inset, the second side has an inset of just the Twin Cities authors, and then the legend. And they're divided up into six parts of the state.
Geographical reasons.
Yes, and this is the first project that the state's tourism board has partnered with the Friends because literary tourism is really big. And what they hope is people will get this map, find out where these folks lived, and maybe when they're driving through, they could stop.
So get on 94, go up to Sauk Center,
whatever.
And you can see where Sinclair Lewis hung out, where he's buried.
Exactly.
But this covers the entire state.
Right.
And the map, again, locates each prominent author by geographical location, where he or she lived.
And it's pretty. Greens and
it's
browns.
Frameable.
And creams. Yeah. You could frame it.
And it's free.
And it's free, available at the History Center and at libraries.
Libraries, okay.
If they haven't run out.
Glad you mentioned that. I grabbed a couple of them last time. You can frame both sides and put
them
on the wall. I think they belong in school rooms too. That
they
would be
do.
Great. Mary Ann, back to your long list, your bottomless list of new titles, both fiction and nonfiction. Tell us what you have here. Turn what? What is that
Turn
called?
Turn Left at the Cow.
Okay.
This is Lisa Bullard, who has done many nonfiction books, but this is her first middle grade. And then we have Kate DeCamillo, of course, who has won every award around, and hers is Flora and Ulysses. So we have the debut and the veteran writer.
Okay.
So, Lisa, who is just a wonderful woman, I should say that if you have a middle school reader on your holiday list, this is one of the first books I have recommended.
Turn Left
at the Cow.
Okay.
So it's about Trav, and Trav, for various reasons, goes from California to his grandma's house in northern Minnesota.
T-R-A-V?
T-R-A-V, yeah. He's 13.
Like Travis?
Right.
Okay.
And he thinks these people are sort of crop circle dudes. Everything everything in the whole town baffles him. And then he gets to chicken poop bingo.
Whoop, now be careful now. We have
so
to be careful.
So this game they play, they divide up in the ground or something into squares, and they put the hen on it, or the chicken, and the chicken, wherever he does his business.
Droppings, yep.
Yep, person wins. So Trav has a number. So Trav has a number, and here he is watching the king. The king is the guy who's running it. The king latched onto a chicken and plucked it down onto the plywood. This last clucker was a real ham. It milked its moment of glory like it was Miss Piggy in front of the paparazzi. Every time it paused and cocked its head, there'd be this big intake of breath from the crowd, as if everybody figured out there was no way the bird could hold it any longer. But then it would get back to prancing around. Finally, just when I thought maybe it was going to keep its little chicken legs crossed forever, I swear the thing looked straight at me with its beady eyes and laid down a giant green glob on number 14.
Boy, there's reading. There's reading for you right on number 14. Okay, turn left at the cow if you dare. You want to buy that for your middle schooler, I guess, huh? Would you buy that for your middle schooler?
I would.
You would, okay.
I laughed so hard the cat flew off my lap.
That's a laugh, I'll tell you. Well, okay, then you have another one here.
This is Kate DiCamillo, and everybody loves Kate because of Winn-Dixie and The Tale of Despereaux, several of her books have been made into novels.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about a squirrel who gets sucked up by the vacuum cleaner and comes back with superpowers. And he's saved by Flora. And Flora is...
Marianne, you've been working too hard.
Flora's a devoted fan of this comic book, a comic strip called The Illuminated Adventures of the Amazing Incandesto. And the motto is, terrible things can happen to you. So this is right after the squirrel got sucked into the vacuum cleaner. Flora and Mrs. Tickham noticed at the same time. The squirrel, said Flora. The vacuum cleaner, said Mrs. Tickham. Together they stared at the Ulysses 2000X and at the squirrel, who was holding it over his head with one paw. That can't be, said Mrs. Tickham. The squirrel shook the vacuum cleaner. That can't be, said Mrs. Tickham. You already said that, said Flora. I'm repeating myself. You're repeating yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I have a brain tumor, said Mrs. Tickham.
My goodness, squirrel and vacuum cleaner. Well, it's said that power abhors a vacuum. I guess animals do, too. Huh? But it came out better for it, apparently.
It did, and Kate is going to be having a party at the Fitz on...
Oh. That'll be great. Can we do a little quiz here with Joe and George and me?
Yes.
Yeah, let's do it. We're upon the Vikings.
All right, are you ready, George?
George, I think the Vikings, they kick off their season, is it this weekend, tomorrow? I don't know.
I do not know.
Let's say soon.
Soon.
Really soon. Kyle, do you know when are the Vikings playing? Do we know? Detroit, let's just say really soon, and that would be accurate. Okay, we'll figure
that
out. In any case, we have a new...
Minnesota Viking trivia, Jim Hoey, H-O-E-Y.
Okay.
I did not believe that you could get almost 250 pages out of Viking trivia, but he did.
Yeah? Okay.
Okay,
well,
are you ready?
They prove that every Sunday. Okay, sure, we're ready. Mm-hmm.
In what year did the NFL create the Central Division, which included Minnesota, Chicago, Detroit, and Green Bay?
George, I'm going to draw a lot of blanks on this one. Central Division, I suppose it goes way back. I think the franchise came in here around 1960 or so. I'd say 65 or 6.
You bingo!
Really? That's a pure
67.
Guess.
67.
Well, that's close enough. Is that close enough?
Huh? Close enough.
Very close.
George, what do you think of my guessing?
You're brilliant.
Okay. All right. We're off to a somewhat good start. All right.
Which three Vikings were named to the NFL's all-decade team for the 1980s?
For the 1980s. Boy. Ring a bell for you, huh? I would have a hard time with that one. Boy.
Would Chris Carter be one of them?
No.
No? Okay. Anything
Joey
else?
Browner, Keith Millard, Gary Zimmerman.
Wow.
Okay.
Keith Millard, big guy on the line. Somebody cracked his knee, and that was the end of his career.
Oh.
Big, hulking guy.
Really?
That's all it takes in pro football. One bad whack, and you're done.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay.
And luckily, it wasn't in his head, because that's really interesting, the brain injury.
The concussions, right. Okay, more Vikings trivia in a new book here. Okay.
What Viking led the NFL in touchdown receptions three times in the 1990s?
Boy, reception. defensive back, huh? Or no, not necessarily. Could be a tight end. Receptions, boy. 1990s?
92. No, I'm sorry, in the 1990s.
In the 1990s. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, I am too.
Chris Carter.
Chris, well, there is your guy, Chris Carter. Okay. Yeah. George, why didn't you use it when we needed it? Okay, Marianne, carry on.
Okay, one of the most dynamic athletes in Viking history. What controversial player became infamous for the following line, I play when I want to play?
Wow. George, that ring a bell?
Even I knew that one.
Did you know that? You know that one?
Oh, yeah.
I play when I want to play.
I can see him. He was number 84,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, who? Oh, come
but
on.
But I can't think of the name.
Oh, I play. Oh.
He was so balletic.
He was the bad boy.
Right, yeah. But he was so beautiful to watch.
Oh, isn't this terrible?
Randy Moss.
Oh, yeah. Right here, yeah, Randy Moss. Oh, he hated the food they served in the training table, and just a nasty guy. Heck of a football player when he wanted to be, okay?
Who scored the first Super Bowl touchdown for the Vikings?
Oh, my. Nobody, because we've... Super Bowl? I mean, oh, gee.
Yeah?
Not the winning, obviously. We never won one, but that... Boy, I don't know. George?
Oh,
that could go all the way back to the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know.
Dave Osborne, Kansas City, Super Bowl IV.
Yep, that's it. Yep. Mm-hmm. Davey Osborne, running back. Okay. Yep. He and Bill Brown were in the backfield there, I think. Yep.
Okay,
right.
One more. What Vikings defensive player holds the franchise mark with 130 sacks?
130 sacks. Whoa, boy. Well, Paige, Eller, Marshall.
You got it. Carl Eller,
yep. Number 81.
Yep.
Number 81. And his teammate on the front line there, Alan Page, the Associate Justice of the Minnesota Supreme Court, number 88. There we go. So I'm just trying to patch in, trying to make myself sound better than I did, which is not possible because I did miserably on that quiz. That's okay, so once again, the book, people will be interested in buying that.
Yes.
It's
Minnesota
just out.
Viking Trivia.
Okay.
From... Not impressed.
Oh, yeah, our friend Norton.
Norton Stillman.
Yep. Stillman's up there. And
1995, paperback.
Okay, Jim Hoey, H-O-E-Y. Mm-hmm. Good book. That's fine.
He'd be a good guy to have on.
I'll do that.
If you had Jim Bruton on, he's the other...
No.
He's the other guy who does wonderful books about local... B-R-U-T-O-N.
Once again, I can show off my ignorance.
Kyle just told me the Vikings play at noon tomorrow.
Noon tomorrow. Oh, okay, thank you, Kyle. A little late in coming, that's better than nothing. Thank you. It was more than I knew. So, okay. Kick off. That's the regular season starter tomorrow. Detroit, I believe. Okay. Marianne, carry on here. Marianne Grossman, our guest here. Of course, the book's editor, critic at St. Paul Pioneer Press. Your fall reading list will be in the paper shortly?
On September 5th, week from Sunday.
Okay, week from, that'll be tomorrow.
No, a week from tomorrow.
A week from tomorrow.
Yeah,
that's
on the 15th.
What I said, Marianne. Okay, right. Okay, good. Go ahead. Yep.
All right, so we have Garrison Keillor. Who has done a number of... He's edited a number of books, but he's never done his own light verse. So his new book is... Oh, What a Luxury, Verses, Lyrical, Vulgar, Pathetic, and Profound.
By Garrison Keillor. Okay. I hear the old piano. Hello, love.
He has one that I can't read about how impolite it is to scratch your butt. I can't read that.
You're not going to read that.
No, I'm going to read.
Don't even describe it.
I'm going to read Ode to the Women on the Mural at the State Theater, Hennepin Avenue, Minneapolis.
Oh, my. A mural, an actual mural at the State Theater in Minneapolis.
The State Theater.
And this is an ode to them.
Right. I didn't know there was a mural there.
Do you have it, George? We just haven't been in there for a while.
Guess. We're
not been in there.
Maybe we'll go now. Let's hear what they are.
Dear naked ladies up in the air, naked girls who make the murals, I love your hair. Here it's November, the season of flu. Weather is cold and drear. Nobody's naked here except for you. Had a good summer, though it was dry. I felt mortality reach out for me, time flying by. I go to work at 8, try to write prose. Some mornings it's okay. Some days I'd like to say, let's take off our clothes. Dear naked ladies, your naked form, your physiognomies, withstand the winter freeze, keep us all warm. Dear naked ladies up in the air, ladies of my delight, when I rise up some night, I'll meet you there.
Oh, how cute. Isn't that lovely? These ladies portrayed, depicted on murals, actually do at the State Theater on Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis.
Yes.
Does that qualify that verse as doggerel? Would that be...
I would think so.
Yeah.
Or pathetic and profound.
That's
and I'm sure that's exactly why Garrison named it that
once
way.
Once again, Mr. Keillor apparently has had a lot of extra time there. You can sit down and put this stuff down on paper, okay? Fine. Oh, some pretty funny stuff there. Okay, what else have you, Marianne Grossman?
Do you want to talk about our latest press?
Okay.
Oh, are we stopping?
I would like
George
to do that.
George is nodding.
He's nodding. It's because we have to censor you. No, we don't. No. We have to take one more commercial break.
Listen, if Let's you have to be censored, you're good.
You're right. Good, and right? That's why you're on the show, Marianne. We're going to take a commercial break. You're back with Marianne Grossman and more wild and woolly things coming off the presses. I'm Stan Turner with exciting news for book lovers. Downtown Stillwater has just completed its new pedestrian walkway next to Valley Bookseller. Park right next to the store, then enjoy your new books out on the deck or on Stillwater's new patio overlooking the St. Croix. Valley Bookseller is indeed the Twin Cities' most beautiful bookstore. Great books, great people, great view. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barber shop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
Rave on and tell me.
Chan Hassen Dinner Theater presents Rave On, the Buddy Holly Experience. Take in all the thrills of a Buddy Holly concert with Billy McGuigan, America's premier Buddy Holly, backed by the incredible Rave On Band, who ignite the stage and breathe new life into the legendary rockers' music. This national act has played hundreds of theaters across the country. Rock out with hits like Peggy Sue.
Oh, well, I love you, Kelly. I love you, Peggy Sue.
Raining in My Heart. It's so easy.
It's so easy to fall in love. It's so easy to fall in love.
That'll be the day, and of course, Rave On. It's a high-energy rock and roll extravaganza. Three shows only on September 26th, 27th, and 28th at Chan Hassen Dinner Theaters. This is the day to call 952-934-1525 and order your tickets today for Rave On, the Buddy Holly Experience.
We are back. Stan Turner with you here. We're surrounded by books galore all over the place. Ceiling high. Marianne Grossman is here with us. She brought a whole bag full, literally, and I bet you your whole house is overrun by them. And
they are.
And your desk down at your office at the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Of course, Marianne, the book review, the book editor, longtime editor, and well, highly respected. And we've got lots more to talk about here. Our time is fleeting. But a couple of things. You had a big splash in the Pioneer Press the other day on this lady.
Yes, about Marlee Rusoff. Loft was born in her bookstore. And now she's a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Both Pat Conroy and his wife Cassandra King are her agents, and Cassandra wrote this wonderful book, which is sort of an homage to Daphne du Maurier's Rebecca, called Moonrise. It's kind of a psychological ghost story. And Marlee sold the book to another publisher, and the publisher wanted to bring it out in paperback. And Marlee, who grew up on her dad's bindery in Minneapolis, thought it deserved better treatment. So she's brought it out. It's her first book from her new imprint called Maiden Lane Press, which is a little street that runs off Summit Avenue in St. Paul.
It is. It's right up by the cathedral.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of... And my personal remembrance of Marlee is she worked... she was vice president for some big big publishers. And I went to the book show once, the big book expo, which is the big national book show, and she was sort of shepherding Peter Jennings at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she was wearing this black, beautiful suit, and she looked like the most elegant, competent woman I had ever met. And I thought, yay, there's a Minnesota woman.
Well,
sorry
that's
to sound parochial, but...
There we are.
There we are.
Yep, we had bragging rights there for sure. Okay, good. Well, just looking, too, at the forthcoming titles, some of them are out already, from the Minnesota Historical Society Press and the U of M Press. And, you can hit on some of those if you'd like.
Big Little Mother, Kevin Kling did really well with his little brother book.
Isn't
and this
he
is
fun?
A new one. He
is
great.
He's a very nice man.
And these
on the
are
shoulder.
Sweet stories. It's about, so the cat runs away, and Big Sister doesn't have anybody to play with, so she makes Big Little Brother go to tea parties and dress up and everything. And then something happens at a dance recital, and they have a new respect for each other.
Oh!
And the other one that I'm recommending for Christmas, mm-hmm. if you've got a little one, for a picture book, is Arlo's Artrageous Adventure by David La Rochelle. He's in Whitebeard. Did you ever have him?
No. Minnesota Book Award. Artrageous.
Yes, it's A R T caps outrageous.
All right.
And it's about this kid who's dragged. It's a picture book, but it's a flip book. And this kid is dragged to a museum, which is the Minneapolis Museum of Art, by this kind of tall, unidentified, crabby-looking woman. And they're looking at all this stuff, but his imagination sees other stuff. For instance, there's a Greek vase, but if you flip it, the vase has legs. And there's the famous mummy case that we all know at the Minneapolis Institute.
The mummy case,
yep.
Yes.
You know, we've all
seen
it.
Sure, we've all seen it.
You
yeah.
flip it open, and the mummy has pink slippers and is carrying a teddy bear. It's just
Marianne,
you think I'm drunk, don't you?
No, but I think you've been out in the sun too long. But this is true, though, right? You're telling us. Yes. Okay. I mean, true, as far as the book goes.
Arlo's outrageous adventure. It's just wonderful.
Marianne, the younger you get, the wilder you get. You know? Okay. And let's see, you have one right here, Rolling Stone.
Right.
We're not talking
Leaving
about
Rolling
the bad
Stone.
Guys of rock and roll.
No.
We're talking about that little town in
right.
Minnesota.
Right.
Okay.
Kevin Fenton, and it's just beautiful writing. And
it's about his hometown.
Yes,
hometown.
His father was not well for years, and he finally couldn't work around the farm anymore. They had to move to Minnesota City. But whether you like, you know, memories of this kind or not, his uh-huh. writing is so beautiful.
Good.
Let me read the narrative. Every once in a while, he'll put in just a little, what we would call a little sidebar, on one page.
All right.
Trash cans were my first anthologies. I toddled amid backyard ones that stood like burnt altars, crusted with carbon and packed with holes. The trash cans held exploded eggshells, the doughy cardboard of egg packaging, greased butter wrappers, and bloody butcher paper. They held language that I could not yet decode. Manic cereal boxes, stylized cake mixes, and the balloony colors of bread wrappers. Who would ever think of balloony colors of bread wrappers.
I would not think. I'm not sure.
Almost made me shiver.
I'm not sure I'd go through a trash can either, Mary Kay.
Well, he was a little boy.
I know he was. Yeah. I guess as a kid, we all did that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice little a memoir, Leaving Rolling Stone,
right.
by Kevin Fenton. And here we have a gem of a little book here.
Yes.
It actually was a little book, wasn't it?
It was a little book.
I think the name is familiar.
The Thought Book of F. Scott Fitzgerald. He wrote it for a year when he was 14, and it was sort of the inspiration for one of his Basil Duke stories.
Yep.
And it's edited.
These were the detective stories he wrote as a kid when he was in St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it was edited by Dave Page, who probably is one of the premier leading Scott Fitzgerald scholars. You've had him on.
Going to be on the show 2 weeks from today with this, yes.
But let me read you a little, because this is a 14-year-old's writing, but you know, the cadence is there, and the echoes of the grown-up are there.
Right.
Chapter 9, Alita and Margaret. February 4th. This chapter should be named Margaret and Alita, but when I wrote this name in the index, I liked Alita best, so it is excusably. I am just crazy about Margaret Armstrong, and I have the most awful crush on her that ever was. This has been the case ever since Bob's party. She is not pretty, but I think she is very attractive looking. She is extremely graceful and a very good dancer, and the most interesting talker I have ever seen or ever heard. One Saturday night, I was surprised by a visit from Margaret asking me to the Bacchus school dance. Of course, I accepted with pleasure, and that night took her to it. I had a fine time, including four dances with Margaret. And a kind of sound, you know, it's
that
starting
sounds
to
like
sound
F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The seeds are there.
14-year-old, right.
Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. He kept this little diary in a locked box under his bed. And amazing. But again, you can almost hear the voice of the great author who would emerge.
And he's talking, Dave is saying in the the back of it, the great lines from Gatsby, when the kids come back, going to the Ordways, the Herseys, the Schultzes.
Right.
So
they're
this
in there.
Is that this time is, in
this,
his life.
This was the genesis when he was a kid.
Right.
He was 12, 13, 14.
Exactly.
That's amazing. That's already out. As I say, we'll be talking with Dave.
I don't think, it's coming out in October.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's going to be a big celebration of the book at the Hill House, so you'll have to look in the Pioneer Press for when. But they're also announcing, which is really pleasing, there's going to be a Fitzgerald Foundation, because the man who was in Fitzgerald's apartment, do you remember that story?
I do, yes. He was Fitzgerald was born on a fourplex on Laurel Avenue, Hill District.
And he was terminally ill, the man who owned the condo, and he sold it and left the money, and it's going to be administered by Stu Wilson from the Friends of the St. Paul Public Library.
People from all over the world come knocking on the door up there on Laurel Avenue. People from Japan and Africa would like to see where Mr. Fitzgerald was born.
Yes.
So we'll be able to do that. As I say again, Dave Page, who has put together the thought book of F. Scott Fitzgerald, actually a little rendering of it, an explanation of it.
Book.
Yeah, he'll be on 2 weeks from today, and we might note that F. Scott Fitzgerald's birthday is September 24th, so that's pretty
good timing.
So, okay.
And ask him, too, I think one of the most interesting things is his relationship with Hemingway, you know, and Dave will tell you all about it.
Just read A Movable Feast, and you will see that. It was a troubled relationship,
to say
the least. Okay, we'll talk about that. What else, Marianne? Our time is fleeting here. In a few more minutes, and we want to make sure we hit all the keynotes.
Yes, I just want to talk about the two the two single events that are so important to the Twin Cities. Opus and Olives, which is the fundraiser for the Friends of the St. Paul Public Library, which is so big now, it's moving to River Center from the Crown Plaza.
Wow.
And there's a wonderful lineup, including John Searles, who's going to be the MC, and Wally Lamb. So that's going to be fun. And
when will that be, Marianne?
That will be October 13th. Is that a Sunday?
Okay.
And I always look forward to that because there was one year when a mystery writer who was kind of in her cups at the very end sang every version of that 17, every stanza of that 17. The other one, which I have to get in here, is the Twin Cities Book Festival.
Yes.
State Fairgrounds, so big, it's moving now to two buildings.
Really? It was on a grandstand last time.
The Progress Building.
Now it's going to go into
the Arts Building. 6,000 people.
Wow.
The biggest, it's the biggest single gathering of book people in the Midwest.
And when will that be?
Every year. The 12th.
Okay, the 12th of...
October.
October, okay. Right. I want to quickly mention, too, October 2nd, that's coming up, at our friend here, Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater, George's favorite bookshop, and mine, too. October 2nd, Libby Hellman, author of Havana Lost, will be there for an author discussion and signing. October 16th at Valley Bookseller downtown Stillwater, Vidar Sundstahl, author of The Land of Dreams. And let's see, I think next Saturday, Carolyn Bulkey and D.A. Lampe will be there. Carolyn has written Chasing the Moon, and Debbie's author of Shadow Play. So just want to keep the folks
people
coming into
love,
the...
Yeah, they love authors. That was the point of this story. They can't... Everybody loves to hear authors. In this day, when everybody's talking about ordering on Amazon and doing this impersonally, there is nothing like meeting an author face-to-face.
We read real books and see real authors face-to-face, don't we, Marianne?
We do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what else do you have on your magic list here? Anything we should know about?
I think I'm done.
Okay, you are done. Well,
I think we got just in time, 12:53.
Just in time. We caught you. A couple of books coming, let's see, from the University of Minnesota Press in October. The title is Harriman versus Hill. Mm-hmm. This are the great railroad tycoons of the early 20th century, late 19th. Harriman being Ed Harriman, the big railroad magnate who was would be the father of Averill Harriman.
And the interesting thing about that book is this was 1901, and that railroad had been bankrupt twice.
Northern Pacific, we're talking about.
But both those guys wanted it because it was they wanted to get to the West.
That's right. James J. Hill, of course, the other guy, the Minnesotan, the transplanted Canadian. Mm-hmm. Guess who got the railroad? Well, you read the book. The name of the book coming soon, October, from U of M Press, Harriman versus Hill, Wall Street's Great Railroad War by Larry Hay. I'll have Larry on, too.
Oh, good. I hope so.
Larry's a good guy, good friend. And also, let's see, from U of M Press, November, and this is appropriate, it's called November's Fury, the Deadly Great Lakes Hurricane of 1913. That was one of the worst in terms of loss of life.
250, I think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's coming out. Michael Schumacher, who lives in Wisconsin, we're going to get him over here for the show as well. November's Fury, that coming out in November, of course, from U of M Press. And we talked about the thought book of F. Scott Fitzgerald from the U of M. That'll be out shortly. Marianne?
Okay. When, one more sports book that we really should talk about, just briefly. I Did It My Way by Bud Grant and Jim Brewton.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just out, forward by Sid Hartman and... Fran Tarkenton, and it's about Grant's, it's the autobiography.
Yeah.
Coached the Minnesota Vikings, 18 successful seasons, 4 Super Bowls. I know there are going to people who are going to love to
absolutely,
read that.
Old stone face standing
right.
there on the
and
sidelines. And they said during it was 20 below wind chill, he would not let his players use hand warmers
right.
on the sidelines. I wonder if that's true. That was the myth anyway. I don't know if they really did do that.
Well, we'll have to read the book.
We'll have to, absolutely.
That's what books are for.
That's right. Thank you, Marianne. Thank you for pointing that out. You're right. What else? We got a couple seconds left here.
2 art books.
Okay.
They're big books, you know. Modern Spirit, The Art of George Morrison. George was an Indian Native American, mm-hmm. And he lived in his later life in Minnesota, up in northern Minnesota. And he didn't do what we think of traditionally as it quote-unquote Indian art, and so there was a lot of discussion about what it meant to be an Indian artist. He did sculpture, mm-hmm. he did paintings, he did all kinds of art with drawings. And the other one is Other Realities, The Art of Paul S. Kramer. Paul had he died last year, had a framing shop, with the first framing shop and gallery in downtown St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely man.
Yes.
And he was also a teacher, and he really made a great contribution to the local art scene.
From the Minnesota Historical Society Press, mm-hmm. coming out in October, Soda Shop Salvation, Recipes and Stories from the Sweeter Side of Prohibition.
And that
good.
Goes, and I think there's a Prohibition exhibition
there
too.
Is.
That yeah, that's
opening in November at the State Historical
right.
Society. One other
right.
coming in October from MHS Press. That's the History Center, Minnesota in the 1970s, by our buddies Dave Kenny and Thomas Saylor. That'll be a good one. We've
it
had
will.
Both those guys.
It will,
and that'll be fun too. So we just have an embarrassment of riches
we
here,
do.
Don't we, Marianne
it's
Grossman?
It's going to be a wonderful fall.
It,
in
it is. And
a lot
it's always,
of good authors coming.
This is a hot one, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, support
great.
Your bookstores.
Thank you, Marianne. You do. You support everything literary.
We
and
need
we're,
to.
We're so proud of you. Thank you, Marianne Grossman.
Thanks for having
books
me.
Books editor,
thanks,
critic.
George.
Yep, you got to come back, Marianne.
Bye, George. See you in spring.
Bye, Marianne.
How did we do on the Vikings quiz, Marianne, before we got passable?
No, you dropped the ball.
I'm sure it
that
is.
That hurts. But I'll just have to take the wound and walk with it. All right, we're done. Marianne Grossman, thank you again, and happy birthday. Folks, have a great day. It's 88 degrees out there already, and we're just going to have to just take a quick look. Let me just go down the weather forecast here, if you can stand it, for the balance of the day. Sunny skies, a high near 91. Tonight, the overnight low, not too bad, if you got the air on, 65 degrees. No mention of rain either this afternoon or tonight. Same thing with tomorrow, mostly sunny. Less heat out there, 81 for a high tomorrow. Come Monday, the new week dawns with mostly sunny skies. Hot again, oh my, 95 degrees, the projected high for Monday in the Twin Cities. On Tuesday, there's only a 20% chance of rain, maybe a thunderstorm in there. Mostly sunny with a high near 83. And Wednesday, mostly sunny. Hey, we're getting better now. Near 82 degrees for a high on Wednesday. And Thursday, hey, we drop into the 70s for highs by Thursday. Near 74 degrees on Thursday. And again on Friday, another pretty moderate day. Sunshine Friday and a high near 72. So maybe we've seen the last, huh? Twin Cities Flashback with Tom Osmond coming up here next. You always enjoy that show as we do. So stick around. Keep it on 1220 right here. We'll see you next Monday, actually, for the All Request and Dedication Lunch Hour. Please join us then, and we'll see you here next week at noon. Bye-bye.